Hi and welcome to Popcast Gaming. I'm your host Oscar, and I'm here today with Andreas Juliusson from Fast Travel Games. Hello.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Yeah. I'm going to be interviewing him on the game Apis Construct and about the studio Fast Travel Games.
Cool.
So, Andreas, for those who doesn't know about the game and the studio, how would you describe the game for them?
Well, Fast Travel Games is a Swedish VR games developer. It was founded in 2016 by a couple of a couple of industry veterans coming from places like DICE and Rovio and Avalanche, and they were already friends, and they basically left their jobs to sort of realize a dream they had to make proper VR games, using basically everything that VR gaming could bring to the immersion and the experience. And quite early on, they started working on what is now still our only title that we have coming from Fast Travel Games, which is called Apis Construct, as you mentioned. And Apis Construct is a narrative-driven single-player action-adventure where you get to play as the last human on Earth, stuck in a battle between two competitive AIs who are sort of try to pull you in their direction and task you to do things for them, really. One of them is more lean towards killing you, while the other wants your help with something. Don't want to spoil too much because it's quite a story-driven game as well, but it's your role sort of to understand the part you're playing in this battle between the AIs, and also sort of to find out what happened to the world you once knew, because apparently all organic life has gone extinct or disappeared for some reason, and you need to find out why. So you get a cyber bow and arrow, and you also have a sort of a cyber shield that you can make appear from the bow, and you use that to fight your way through a couple of missions. I think we have 12 missions in total. There's a safe house where you can upgrade your equipment using the sort of experience currency that you gather throughout the game. So that's basically it. It's our sort of our first try to make what you could call a real game for VR gaming, because in VR today, you know, with the industry being very young, it's there's a lot of light experiences or demo-like experiences. There's a lot of shovelware as well available, and we really wanted to bring something more comprehensive to the core gamers of VR. Also, using everything that VR gaming can, like, you know, our games, for example, will have hand interactions. It's an important thing for us that you can actually interact with the world. You can lift things and throw things, and you can type on computers and stuff like that. So that's a short story of, you know, where we come from and about our first game that came out early last year.
Yeah, I've actually played it a little, at least.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think that's, you should play the game we were talking about.
Yeah, especially as a Swede, I think.
I recognize a lot of things in the game actually from Sweden.
Yeah. I mean, it's placed in a future semi-alternative Stockholm. So there are a couple of landmarks that you can recognize. We have some Swedish street signs, etc. It's more just to add an exotic flavor to this experience. You don't have to, you know, have visited Stockholm to understand anything, but a couple of Easter eggs placed in the game as well. I also want to mention that the game is already available for PlayStation VR and the high-end PC VR like Vive, Oculus, and Windows Mixed Reality. That's where we are today.
I loved it because I felt right at home in the game.
Oh, cool.
Because of my Stockholm collection.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, the starting area is not very far from where we are sitting today, actually. First come outside of the first sort of elevator room, and you look up at the sky, you see a very well-known Stockholm landmark just a couple of hundred meters from where our office is, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, like, inspirations for the game?
Yeah, so we have a creative director. His name is Erik Odeldahl, and he's very much into science fiction. He reads a lot. He's also had a couple of novels published in the sort of science fiction segment. He was the design director for Mirror's Edge Catalyst that DICE developed a couple of years back. So this is basically his first own story that he's written for a game. And it's, I think he brought a lot of inspiration from classical science fiction novels and movies. I know he's mentioned Space Odyssey 2001, for example, Kubrick. And I know that he has a lot of semi-obscure book titles that he loved to throw around that I have no idea what they are about. But in terms of gameplay, I think we also, you know, brought inspiration from games like Metroid Prime, Half-Life, I think is also, you know, an inspiration source for us. So it's basically first person action adventures with a science fictional theme. Also, I think Erik is very, you know, is trying to say something, and he doesn't want to put a story just in front of you that is just there for everyone to clearly understand. It has a couple of levels of, you know, the player himself interpreting things, what might have happened and not, and why things occur in a certain way. So we're trying not to just write everything clearly to everyone, but more let players find out about the story and the world and make their own connections.
Yeah, in my opinion, you're rewarded for like exploring, taking up everything, reading everything. Or you miss
very much. Yeah, that is very much the case. I think Erik called it. He had a sort of a saying around this. It was like a narrative-driven exploration or something like that. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was quite spot on. I mean, the more you explore in the game, the more you read about the history of the AIs and the corporations that built them. And the more you explore and find secrets, the more you will understand about what actually happened. If you just run through the game, killing enemies, you know, finishing it, you might not have really understood what actually went on in the past and what's going on in the present.
Yeah, so I have some friends who actually tell me that a lot when I play games. You have to go through every part. Like, I miss a lot in the, usually. But here I had to explore everything.
Yes,
I don't know why.
We try to incentivize that. And you also, usually you get rewarded with RP, which is the in-game experience currency, Radiance points. So you can upgrade your equipment. The more you explore, the more RP you get as well. And also, of course, if you're a completionist like I am when I play games, there's also secrets to find in every level. And, you know, finding all the secrets in all level and get that box ticked, so to speak, will take some time, but also works as a reward for you if you are that kind of player who wants to find everything.
Yeah. And I want to talk about a little of the challenges with doing a VR game. Is that any particular thing?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we have been in VR development now for 2.5 years or so. Basically, as early as VR gaming has been around. I mean, it kicked off with Oculus and Vive releasing spring of 2016. So the industry is very new. I often look at it as going back to the Nintendo days of the first console from Nintendo, the NES, in the middle of the 80s, when, you know, you weren't really clear about, you know, on how things would be perceived, or you know, if your game was going to be liked or not, and the reasons behind that. So with the industry being so young, I think one of the main challenges from a VR development perspective is that we have so little insights as to what players are expecting and about their preferences. So speaking specifically about development, releasing a first-person game like Apex Construct is a struggle, because you have to look at so many different platforms, if you're releasing your game on multiple platforms like we did, you have to cater for the controller and the tracking differences between Oculus Rift and HTC Vive and Windows Mixed Reality headsets and then PlayStation VR. They all basically are very different from a tracking and from a controller perspective. So that's really a struggle for, you know, and most studios in the VR gaming industry are relatively small today. We are actually, I think, you know, one of the bigger ones, but we're only 13 full-time employees. So the multi-platform aspect is a challenge. You know, the fact that we don't have any standardization yet, like in flat-screen gaming. And then I think the second part is just to understand what players are expecting and what they want from a VR game. As an example, Apex Construct was developed with teleportation movement only in the beginning. But we quite soon realized that more and more players were asking for what's called free locomotion, where you move around like in a first-person shooter with your analog sticks, for example, or touchpads. So we implemented that, but that's not enough. There are also layers to that. So some prefer snap turning, some prefer smooth turning. Some can only handle, you know, where the free locomotion is driven by the way your headset is looking. And some want your controllers to steer the location of your free locomotion. So many things that you need to offer as an option to make sure that as many players as possible can play your game. And that's a real challenge because it requires a lot of QA time, for example, like quality testing, quality assurance. And being a small studio, we usually do our own QA. We don't have a specific QA team that you know can test our game weeks and weeks. So that is a challenge. I mean, it's a very different thing, of course, releasing a flat screen game for the normal gaming audience. Everyone knows now how a first person shooter works on console. You have basically the same button setup and the same way to move around. In VR, it's very different.
Yeah, I noticed that when I played the game that it's a lot of options for just that movement thing. I was really impressed, actually.
Well, not all of them were in the game from the start. That's the thing also that, you know, since we released Apex Construct, we paid close attention to the communities and our players and sort of gathered feedback from them and actually made, I think it's 5 major updates to the game over the last 12 months. And almost all of these updates have had some kind of option added to the locomotion features or the movement features. So, and you know, I'm not even still, there might be things missing in Apex. I do think that the majority of players today in VR can enjoy Apex Construct now because of these options and these, you know, preferences are sort of adhered to.
Yeah, I didn't find anything at least that I'm missing in that aspect.
That's good.
I was really happy with it.
Cool.
Because I have played a lot of other titles from bigger companies, or however I should say it. Like,
yep.
If we take a really big one, Skyrim came in VR.
Yep.
The, at least at launch, that wasn't really good.
No, I know. I mean, the thing is also with Skyrim, I love Skyrim in VR. I think, you know, from an immersion standpoint, it's really something else to stand on top of a mountain and, you know, look down at the world in VR. But the game is not made for VR from the ground up. So you will always have that sort of sense of not being optimized for your experience when you play. Our game is only made for VR, so we made sure to try at least to bring the best possible gameplay experience for a VR exclusive audience. And we didn't have to look at how do we solve this for a flat screen experience, or, you know, our game doesn't even support the DualShock controller on PlayStation. You know, two move controllers are required because hand interactions is such an important thing for us, where the way you pull the string back on the bow and fire it, and the way you shield yourself by pulling up your arm in front of you, stuff like that couldn't work with a DualShock. So I think there's a clear difference between the games that are made for VR and the games that are ported to VR, like Skyrim.
Yeah, and I have to say, if you compare those, your game to Skyrim, if it comes to archery, I have tried some archery in real life, actually.
Oh, cool.
Skyrim is too much like hitting as... it's too easy to hit. They assist you way too much.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think the bow and arrow mechanics in Apex Construct is one of the features we're most proud of, and also one of the most liked features from gamers' feedback. So I think that's really something that, and that's, you know, that's also one of the reasons that we added a new game mode to Apex Construct called the Cygna Cup Challenge last year as well, which is more of a sort of an arena score chase challenge where you shoot at targets and you climb a leaderboard. It's because we wanted to do something more with what we believe is an awesome bow and arrow mechanic, and the physics in the bow, was, you know, the way it drops in the air if you don't pull the string back far enough, stuff like that. So yeah, I agree. I think Skyrim is amazing, but it's from a VR gameplay perspective, there are many more, you know, more impressive games on the market.
Yeah, I almost felt like holding a bow in one sense, like the drawing mechanic and that stuff. And it's not your game isn't too much assisted like hitting. Really have to aim.
That's true. You have to.
Yeah. You can't just fire away.
No, I mean, you can fire away, yeah. But make sure that you also sort of really, really try to hit the targets. Because you will have projectiles coming at you as well. So you can either dodge them or use the bow. And we try to sort of create that kind of dynamic action in the game. So you can't just stand still and fire multiple arrows at an enemy and expect to beat the enemy. You have to be a little bit more strategic.
Yeah, I noticed that too. So I think that shield thing also was amazing.
No, I agree. It's very, you know, seamless. Like, you know, it appears quickly. And you can't just keep it up because it has a sort of a burnout thing that if you get hit too many times, you can't use the shield for some time. So you have to be a bit strategic even from that perspective. Like, shield and then maybe move and then shoot some arrows at the enemies and you know, rinse and repeat.
I'm also notoriously bad at puzzles when it comes to games. Like, that's okay. So not my field, but these ones were like on clipboards and all that stuff, those codes in different areas. I think that works for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of, you know, picking up things and reading on things in VR. It's part of the immersion that we try to add. Like, you can find hidden clues and passwords all over the place, really. And some of the puzzles actually uses the bow and arrows as well. So further into the game, I'm not sure how far you played, but you will also get additional arrow types. The first arrow type you get is an electrical arrow, and that arrow is also used to solve some of the puzzles in the game, like to charge up certain things, for example, or make an elevator move, stuff like that. So we have a couple of different puzzle elements in the game that's, you know, all of them with the VR and immersion in mind.
Yeah, maybe that's why it works for me. In flat screen, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, no, I think it's you know, we only think VR, so that's probably why it's fun to do as well.
Yeah, it feels like a natural part of the game for me here in one way.
Yeah, cool. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah, I noticed one thing. It's the enemies are only robots, as far as I know. Is there a thought about that? Like, it's robot animals.
Yes, you know, I don't want to spoil too much of the story, but I also already mentioned that there are two AIs. One is called Father, which is the one who gives you directions through the game, basically, and tasks you to do things. And then there's an AI called Mother, which is, as far as you know, it's sort of the enemy in the game who sends these robot creatures to kill you. There is a reason why we chose to go with the robots, and it has to do with the motivation from these two AIs. You know, the world is void of organic life completely, and these AIs they both realize they might have played a part in this this thing happening. The actual event is referred to as the shift, but I don't want to go into details about what the shift is. But populating the Earth again with robotic animals is a way for them to get closer to sort of bring real life back to Earth. And you know, we toyed with the idea of when the AIs woke up again after this event and all the humans were gone and all the animals were gone, what they were left with were, you know, books about animals, or maybe even like YouTube clips of cats and dogs. So they use that as a reference material when they try to create life again on Earth, and that's why there are robotic animals in the game.
So what's the future for the studio in that regard? Are you upcoming projects or?
Yeah, we have quite a lot going on at the moment, actually. We haven't officially announced what we're doing next after Apex Construct. I mean, last week we celebrated the first, the 1 year anniversary of Apex Construct being on the market. And we also, just a couple of days ago, actually, we confirmed officially as well that we are working on multiple games for the new headset, which is coming this spring, called Oculus Quest. Which is like the first untethered all-in-one gaming headset that doesn't require any external cameras, no cables, or no computer or console. It's just basically a plug-and-play solution for VR gamers, and we are super excited to be developing games for that. That's not, you know, that doesn't mean that we are taking our hands off the other formats. You know, PlayStation VR and Vive and Oculus Rift and all those will still be our focus headsets as well. But that's part of what we're doing right now, is making games for this new headset, which is super exciting. And then, of course, we are also listening to feedback from the VR communities. And Apex Construct is... know, it's selling really well even 12 months after launch. I think from my perspective at least, it's becoming a bit of a cult classic in VR games. So we are exploring, you know, how we could potentially expand on the Apex Construct universe, you know, without promising a sequel or something like that, but we're thinking about what to do next with the Apex Construct brand. So that's also something we're toying with. And then we have, you know, other things as well. But at this point in time, we are not ready to reveal any details yet.
Yeah, but I will definitely stay tuned for that, because I think this one was an amazing game. Following up, maybe it's not a sequel, the next one, but following up a game that is so well received, isn't that kind of hard pressure on you?
I see what you mean, and of course it could be. We, from our perspective, we just see all the things that we didn't have time to implement in Apex Construct 1. And, you know, all the features, all the things that would have made Apex Construct 1 even better, we look at that and we learn so much. Apart from making the first game, I think all studios have to make one VR game before they can understand how to make the next excellent game. So part, you know, using all the knowledge we have now and with the dev team, which is many people are, you know, worked on Apex 1. And also, of course, as I mentioned before, the last 12 months has been tremendous for us from an engaging perspective with the communities, where we have a lot of insights, a lot of contacts that we are super happy to have, that can help us, you know, with a potential sequel, to make sure that the sequel is superior to the first game. So I'm not really afraid about that. I think it's more just an opportunity for us to do something even better.
Yeah, and it has to feel amazing, like having a physical copy also. Not all VR games comes out that way.
No, that's true. I think part of the reason why we did it is because we're quite, I won't say old in the studio, but the average age is it's not 20 or 30, to say that. So we all, basically all of us, remember the days of discs and even before that, you know, cassettes, and holding your own game in your own hands and looking at it, at the box, and, you know, maybe even smell it. Stuff like that really, really, you know, something that we wanted to do. And again, I think we have to do everything once in VR to understand what works and what doesn't work. And luckily we found a great publisher partner in Perpetual Games, who are kind of a PSVR specialist when it comes to boxed games. And we managed to get the game out last summer in both EU and North America, which is awesome. So looking at data globally, physical sales are still the majority of game sales versus digital, even in Sweden, though, you know, digital has overtaken physical. But, you know, the rest of the world, if you look at it from a global perspective, a box release can still be very important depending on.
Yeah, I'm one of those old school gamers also. I was actually, my first console was on 8-bit Nintendo.
Nice.
Yeah, so I love physical games. That's just something for me. I'm connecting with that old school thing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, of course, you know, I think that digital games over time, of course, will overtake physical. It's the way things are moving in the entertainment industry. If you look at music, for example, you know, you rarely find a classical music store anymore, because people are used now to listen to music through Spotify or iTunes. It's basically all digital. In the west parts of the world, like our country here, movies and TV series are also moving in that direction now with you know, services like Netflix and stuff. So, of course, games will also end up there. But, you know, games are, one game is much heavier from a size perspective than a movie. So it's not as easy for everyone who doesn't have, you know, a 4G, 5G connection or a fiber network to just download 50 gigabytes of a game. So that's one of the reasons why digital distribution hasn't really seen the same development for games as for music and movies.
Yeah, but I guess one of the things has to be also those collector's editions. I know.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's true. You can't get a figurine through a digital download. It's just impossible.
Yeah, I love those. I have to say that. I love those. I have a lot.
Yeah.
My wallet is screaming at me sometimes in the fall when a lot of games comes out between fall and Christmas.
Yeah, it's money well spent.
Yeah, but my economy doesn't agree with it. I say every year about this time, oh, I have to save for those because they are expensive.
Yeah.
But same mistake every year.
Maybe that's your retirement plan. Like, you know, they will be worth a lot of money in let's say 30 years, and you can just, you know, sell it and retire or something.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. So, I saw on Twitter that you just reached 100,000 downloads on the demo.
Yeah, that was an amazing milestone for us, actually. We didn't have a PlayStation VR demo available on the PlayStation Store when we launched the game. It was something we managed to put live post-launch. You know, in retrospective, I would have loved to have that demo before releasing the game, so we could build up some hype around Apex Construct, but that we just didn't have the resources and time to do so. So we haven't been live even a year. I think it's maybe 8 months or so we've been live on the PlayStation Store with the demo, 9 months. And 2 days ago, we actually reached 100,000 demo downloads, as you mentioned, which is just, for us, it's amazing. It means that, 100,000 people around the world have tried Apex Construct, and hopefully we'll get some conversion for the full game for that. But at least, just the idea of so many people starting up Apex Construct on their PSVR, it's an amazing feeling.
Yeah, I'm really happy about there is a demo. Not all games in VR has that. It's more usual in flat screen gaming, actually.
Yeah, definitely. I think, our demo is from last summer, though. So the trouble with it is that we have made so many improvements to the main game that are not implemented in the demo, and we're desperate to bring the demo up to the same experience as the main game. So hopefully we can do that as well. But like you said, having a PSVR demo in the PlayStation Store, it means that you are one of very few demos available. And I think, I remember the demo discs back in the 90s as well. Like when you get a new disc with a couple of games to try, it was an amazing feeling. And a demo can absolutely work if it's done properly. I mean, there are bad demos that can actually hurt your business. But if you do a good demo that is fun to play, but it really urges you to keep playing, maybe you have something pristine there that can help your business as well.
Yeah. And one question I have to ask before I round this up, it's what's your favorite game of all time?
Silent Hill 2.
Oh, I don't dare to play those. I love horror movies, but games, no way.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the number one game for me. I have a couple of more, like Final Fantasy 7 and 9. I'm a huge JRPG player. So I really, really remember those. I think Castlevania Symphony of the Night is another all-time favorite. But if I have to choose one title that probably impacted me the most and actually made me want to enter the gaming industry, it was that game, Silent Hill 2. I actually cosplayed as the Pyramid Head character once. Pyramid Head was like the villain of the game that followed you around. There's a nasty scene in the kitchen that players of Silent Hill 2 will most likely remember for their lives when you were hiding in the closet and looking at this scene with this freakish character called Pyramid Head.
Yeah, I have seen him in pictures. He doesn't seem very nice.
He's not very nice. But the way they just tied everything together without giving you all the details, and the fact that you weren't really clear about, is this actually happening or is this just inside his own head? Is it his interpretation of the events that occurred that has brought these characters to life? And there's so many levels to it, and the music and the just the sense of playing it is such an atmospheric game.
So I love those games that it's not clear and all that stuff. It's you have to interpret it, and I love those, but horror games, no way. I've tried Resident Evil in VR, and I could play it for like 10 minutes.
I finished that game in two nights. I even bought the Resident Evil VR candle that you can buy. So you light a candle when you play that game in VR, and your room starts to smell like an old wooden house and dried blood, apparently. So just to increase the immersion of being inside the house in VR was awesome. I'm not sure if it actually brought something to the immersion, but it was a fun thing to do.
That's an awesome idea.
Yeah, so. It was cool. Like a fourth dimension.
Yeah, but that's it for this episode of this podcast.
Cool.
And it will be available both on YouTube and Spotify.
Awesome.
Yeah, I will do gameplay in the YouTube version.
Cool.
Yeah, so thank you for coming, Andreas.
Thank you for having me, and have a nice day now.
The same to you, and next week we will have a visit for Gamertar VR on YouTube. So this is it for this time, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.